with Harry Broadhurst and Tony Acidity.
Jay has these issues getting in, Tony?
I don't know, man.
Jesus. It should not be this difficult to log in for the show. Anyways, June 30th, 2014, ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Raw Reaction. I am Harry Broadhurst, returning this week, Tony Acero. Tony, welcome in, sir.
Hold on.
Nobody really knows this, but...
Tony Acero.
The softest lip. And sometimes, at night, we spoon.
It did your heart good tonight, didn't it, Tony?
Oh, it was beautiful.
I'm sure we'll get to that in full detail a little bit later on here in the show. Actually, what I'd like to do right now before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show is I'd like to welcome in somebody that I'm actually familiar with. Veteran Ohio independent referee Jimmy Christopher. Jimmy, are you with us here on the reaction, sir?
I believe I'm on the reaction. Can you hear me, Harry?
Yes, I can, Jimmy. Thank you for joining us, Tony, Jimmy, Tony.
Sup, thank you
Jim
very
what?
Much for having me.
Guys, let's talk about Raw, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yes.
All right, so we'll start with the opening segment, and after what some are considering a lackluster Money in the Bank pay-per-view, especially by Money in the Bank pay-per-view standards, we start to set the stage for Battleground, which is just 20 days away tonight, and they open it with a segment with Triple H and Stephanie in the ring calling out John Cena. The first thing we do is we reveal the cover for the WWE 2K15 video game, and then we announce that since Cena decides he's going to take the hard way and not play ball with the authority, it's hustle, loyalty, and respect. He's not going to do that. We find out that they put Cena in a four-way for the title at Battleground with John Cena, Roman Reigns, Kane, and Randy Orton. Tony, you want to go ahead here?
Yeah, you know, any segment with Cena has an automatic, you know, negative sign in front of it for my liking. And this wasn't much different. There were a couple of things that I felt wrong, but if I were to be unbiased, then I would say that it was intriguing in the ability of the authority trying to coerce Cena into being something of their new puppet. I like that no matter how short-lived it was. However, once again, we had Cena channeling, you know, Denzel Washington as if he, you know, were partially black, which he's not, and it just it's bothersome. But for once, someone was able to mock him about it, and Triple H doing the whole yo-yo-yo thing made me laugh. I really like that. I'm not sure I understand why Reigns is in the Fatal 4-Way, considering everything that has happened before. So it didn't really make sense to me as well. In the entirety of the segment, it was another Triple H talk, Cena talks, and Steph's kind of there. So I didn't hate it, but you know, was it all that necessary? I'm not sure. I like that they set the ground for the next pay-per-view, but there's still a few questions that they didn't answer, and actually left a few to be answered.
Jimmy, go ahead.
I agree with what Tony said for the most part. I'm not always as negative with Cena as I used to be a few years back, but as far as the segment goes, I thought it was another one of those, we'll throw Triple H out there, Stephanie will be with him, then Cena comes out and he fights the authority because he's the, you know, the hero of the day. And I just felt like it was almost forced to set up for the pay-per-view, and it was just kind of, you knew what was going to happen, you knew what they were going to say, and I didn't enjoy it as much as I hoped I would.
I think the reason that they're putting Roman Reigns in there is because of the segment that we saw on SmackDown a couple weeks ago where Reigns stepped into Cena's face. And it's possible that the Authority views Reigns as a viable contender to take the title away from Cena, and maybe they feel that they can, as you said, Tony, coerce Reigns into their camp, even though one of the members of their camp is Seth Rollins, who beats Roman Reigns' ass with a steel chair like a month ago. So I don't know if the thinking there is solid or not, but there you have it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not so much the, of course, we can explain any particular angle that they may or may not be doing, but you know what? That's not our job. As fans, we are supposed to at least get some semblance of what's going on, and for us to stretch it or to fantasy book or whatever it may be, it bothers me to the point where, like, I just feel like that's not my place. You're supposed to tell me what's going on. Not tell me, but show me or give me some sort of inkling or make it make sense. And, you know, this is a complaint about a three-hour show. There was so much positive that went on tonight that it was just – it was a good show. But if we're focusing specifically on this segment, then it kind of highlights what's wrong with the main event, and is that it's the same old shit. Hopefully that's changing, and I get a little bit of a hint of that altering, you know, just by little signs that we saw tonight. But yeah, as far as tonight, the first 20 minutes of the show, it wasn't all that great for me.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, Tony hits it on the head here. It's another good show with another lackluster opening. And I understand why they did it. I understand, you know, the reasoning behind it. And as a fan, I just say to myself, okay, here it is again. It's like a reusable wrapper. You know, you take it off the candy bar. If you take a bite of the candy bar, you put it back in the wrapper, and that's it. Then the next week, you pull it out, and it's the same candy bar. They come out. They do their little opening skit. They do the, you know, promo. But, I mean, the show itself, but then once you get into the candy bar and get into the good part, it's really good. And that's how I kind of saw tonight's show. You know, so much went on and so many angles furthered, so much stuff that was just, it was the good part of it. It makes up almost for the beginning, but it still leaves that bad taste in your mouth when it comes back to the main event.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Jimmy. The only thing that I could see going forward here is hopefully this right here, and especially with what went on in the main event itself here, it looks to be that we're on the precipice of entering Roman Reigns into the main event scene. And I do believe that that is something that will definitely freshen up the main event picture in the WWE right now. If you guys had to choose somebody other than Roman Reigns, though, is there anybody in particular that you could see elevated anytime soon into that main event picture? I think the obvious choice for me would have to be Dean Ambrose.
Yeah, well, you know, you choose Dean Ambrose because you have a hard-on for him, which there's nothing wrong with that. I actually, you know, find a similar type.
Really?
Of
really? Really?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's damn true. No, Ambrose is great, and he's getting his pops just like he should. I mean, they screamed and cheered loudly for him at the end of the show, and rightfully so. His character is fresh. It's not, you know, the thing is it's not unique, but he has a unique take on it, and that's really all that you need. Wrestling, just like life, is extremely cyclical and repetitive, and the only thing you need is to add something fresh to it. That's exactly what he's doing. So Ambrose would be great. However, I like where he's at right now. Reigns is apparently the big star that they're going to be focusing on. I have no problem with that. I just want it to make sense. Similar to the candy bar analogy, you know, the opening segment of Raw, not just tonight, but in general, and anything that involves Triple H or Cena, is like, what the WWE is afraid to do is just completely alter everything. You know, it's like the ex-girlfriend that still puts out. You know, you go back, it's not as great as what you've had before, but you've had it before, you're used to it. You know, at one point it feels at least comfortable, so let's just go with it, do it, and then tomorrow we'll feel bad about it. And then they just do that a lot, and I mean, it is what it is. Once again, it's a three-hour show. This is the portion where, you know, we talk ad nauseum about John Cena continuing to take the spotlight and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, if that's our focal point of the main event, or I'm sorry, of the opening segment and the main event, then, you know, that's where we're going to go with it.
Well, actually, I don't necessarily know that we actually had to focus on Cena in the main event. I think that the main event was more of a vehicle to establish Roman Reigns, too.
Yeah.
And especially given the way we went off of the air with Roman Reigns and Triple H face-to-face, because that's obviously, as we've mentioned here on The Reaction before, a long-rumored plan for SummerSlam.
Yeah, and put inside the, you know, also the fact that, you know, and this is minute. It can matter as much as we make it matter, but Reigns was the last dude to come out. Through the stands, he was the one with the music playing. You know, he came out after Cena. And, you know, it's just one of those little things that kind of enhance him as a main event player.
He was the last babyface to make an entrance during Money in the Bank as well. The last entrance in the match itself went to Kane, though. Jimmy, your thoughts as far as the main event picture. Do you like the fact that they're moving Roman Reigns towards it? And if you could figure out somebody else to move up towards that main event picture right now that's on the current level that a guy like a Roman Reigns is, who would it be?
Man, you guys are probably going to hate me because I'm going to complete the triangle of the Shield here, and I'm going to go with Seth Rollins. I love everything that he's doing right now. He goes out there, and he puts just so much effort into all his work when he's in the ring. You know, it's just, it's so enjoyable to watch. It's so fresh. It's another young guy that is just going out there and killing it. I mean, he's got a great, you know, character right now. He's over, which is fabulous because you can't say that about everybody on the roster there. He goes out there and he goes back to the heel, being the quote-unquote puppet, Triple H now, and he just goes out there and puts on a great show. You know, he can go with anybody. You know, he goes with Ziggler and they put on 5-star matches. He goes out there with RVD and he makes RVD look not high. It's an amazing thing to watch because the kid just throws his body around in the ring. Caution to the wind with this kid, and that's what I like the most about him. And I think if, barring any injuries in the future, I think this kid is going to be the one that people will be talking about in about a year or so once he cashes in that Money in the Bank.
I've heard talk going around that if they do go with the planned Reigns title win at Money in the Bank, that it could be Rollins cashing in at WrestleMania for the first time ever, which is something that I think would definitely help solidify the positions on the roster of both Reigns and Rollins if it actually happens with the first cash-in ever at a WrestleMania event.
So if all three of us are talking about Reigns, Rollins, and Ambrose being the possible, you know, next big thing in the main event, I mean, can we just call the Shield as a group one of the biggest successes ever? I mean, it's pretty interesting that all three of us are focusing not on who is currently the champion or who could possibly be in Randy Orton or whatever, or even Bryan, but these three young or fresh faces, like, are they effectively, you know, a complete success story, barring the fact that they don't have a title, you know?
I think each one, when they held their own title already, whether it was the U.S. or half of the tag team, they were a success. I think they were, like I said, they're young, which is great. You know, they're willing to do anything, and I think they all proved that Sunday night when they went into those Money in the Bank matches and just went all out.
Yeah.
I mean, and but as far as the future, I mean, you can talk about any of the guys on the roster, though, because everybody, I mean, anyone that gets TV time is just putting on a show. You got people like Bray Wyatt, who's obviously got a huge following. You got people, you know, you got Cena. You got Orton, who's already been established for a while. You've got Kane, who's been established since, gosh, it's been 10, 12, 14 years now since he actually came on the scene. You got people like that who are already established. These young guys, those are the ones that everybody wants to see flourish now, I think. Like, it's kind of a psychological thing where you see this young guy go out and put on a show, and you say to yourself, man, I really hope that they do something with him and they give him the shine that he deserves. And after all the work he puts in, then when it happens, you know, everyone's like, oh man, it's always a two-way road with that. It always forks right up the middle. Once they get to the top, people are either gonna jump off his bandwagon or run it into the ground. And that's all. Like, that seems to always be the way I see things. I mean, it happened with Cena. It happened with Triple H, Shawn Michaels. You name it. Once they make it to the top of that mountain, it's a two-way street from there, for the fans. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because it stops playing to a certain demographic. I don't know. But as a fan, I think you should just enjoy it, whoever it is.
Well, the big thing for me here, and we're going to move on to the next topic here in a few seconds here. The big thing for me here, if Seth Rollins is going to become a main eventer, he's going to have to change that finishing move. It's just, to me, the set-off to that, the setup to that finishing move comes off a little contrived at times. And he has a better move in his repertoire that he's been using for years beforehand, but the only problem is the WWE's aversion towards moves that drop people on their heads and shoulders and stuff regarding the move that he used to use when he was the ROH champion, Tyler Black, which was God's last gift. But we've actually seen him bust that move out in NXT before. So I think he's a seriously credible finisher away from being a full-time main eventer still.
You know, if they slightly alter the curb stomp, I think they could still use it. It looks vicious enough, and the right people, RVD and Dolph Ziggler being two of them, sell it the perfect way. I do agree the setup is a little bit too common. It's almost always the same way. But there's different ways. It's one of those moves that's not as, you know, not as RKO-ish, but really close to where it could be. It could happen anywhere, and it could be set up anywhere, and it could be at any time. They just need to alter it a little bit. But that's minute compared to, you know, Seth Rollins as a rising character. I mean, I know that in the Raw report, I believe that I called him a shiny black dildo walking down the ramp, which is fine. But in all reality, I do appreciate his work, and I do see him. He's got the briefcase. It's almost guaranteed that he's going to be a champion well within the year.
Well, ask Damian Sandow about that.
It's highly possible that he'll be a champion within the year.
All right. You missed last week's episode, Tony, so we want to give a question to shout out.
Sean Garmer.
It's brought to you by
Wrestling to the Max.
Sean filled in for you last week. We wanted to thank Sean here. We also wanted to make sure that we mentioned that Sean's podcast, Wrestling to the Max, airs after us here on the Raw Reaction. So if you happen to stay up late and you want to give them a listen, by all means, feel free. You can also download them. You can visit their Facebook group as well at Wrestling to the Max on Facebook as well. But Sean actually drank my root beer last week, Tony.
Oh, good for him. He knows best.
So, it's time for Tony's first do.
All right. If you know me, if you read the Raw recaps, you know exactly what this is going to be about. I talked to Harry about possibly making this entire show all about AJ Lee, but he wasn't going for it, so he gave me at least one segment. She's back. She returned. The pregnancy rumors that I told everyone were false. She's back in all of her glory. She here's what happened for those that didn't see Raw, which I highly doubt you didn't. But Paige came out. She had some heel tendencies. She cut a promo that basically said that, you know, she came here to prove something, and she proved it. AJ comes from out of nowhere, talks her into a match for the title, gets kicked around a little bit, ends up winning the belt back, and now she's Divas champion for the second time in a row. We don't know if this was a double turn. It seemed like Paige was being a heel within the ring, and AJ was being very serious about, you proved me wrong, you shut me up, and blah, blah, blah. We don't know where it's going. Honestly, I don't care. AJ's back, and that means that she's back on my screen, and everyone, I mean, if I can go behind the curtain real quick, just the fact that I was tagged in more than 5 posts and tweeted numerous times, and the entire comment section blew up regarding AJ and myself, means that whatever I'm doing is the right thing. As far as a writer goes, as far as a writer for 411mania.com, anyone that assumes that this is some rape fantasy or some huge, huge debacle or some ploy to get publicity, I'm telling you right now, it is some ploy to get publicity, and it has worked astoundingly well.
Jimmy, your thoughts on AJ Lee's return tonight?
AJ Lee, I mean, I think Tony loves to talk about this woman more than anyone I've ever met. not that I find anything wrong with that, obviously. But, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was kind of downplayed just a little bit in my head by the other returns that we'll we're sure to talk to about later tonight. But, I mean, I just felt like it was kind of underplayed. It was kind of out of nowhere. No one, I mean, obviously no one expected it after it followed such a thing. So, like, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone that didn't watch tonight. But, you know, there are a couple of terms.
They're listening. Sorry to interrupt you there, but odds are if they're listening to the show, they probably watched Raw tonight.
All right,
or they're
going to
listen to the show after they watch it.
Exactly. You saw Miz. You saw Jericho. All these awesome returns. And then AJ gets to come out. I would have thought that if they were going to do that, maybe do that in the first hour of the show. That way not to take away from any other return and to give each return its own due. That's just, like I said, that's my opinion. I thought what they did was fine. I thought the way that it was kind of a double turn, I liked that a lot because I kind of felt like Paige should do that with her look anyway. And she should be a heel more. But, like I said, to each their own. And, no, but I enjoyed the returns.
A couple things to touch on there. One, I think this is the beginning of the anti-diva character that Paige ran down in NXT, and I think this is going to translate a lot better to the WWE screens. And I'm just happy to be here. I'm their new champion, and I'm going to get my ass kicked in every single freaking match and still somehow win. This right here is a chance for Paige to establish herself as a legitimate threat, a legitimate gimmick with herself, because it's the anti-diva thing is something that she's taken very seriously. It's something that she was running even before she came into the WWE, back when she was still working the UK independent scene and Shimmer here in the States. And it's definitely a way to get Paige more time on screen as well. And it's a nice throwback as well to the night after WrestleMania and the way that Paige won the title from AJ here turn. As Jerry Lawler put it, it was kind of karmaic in a way, it being the fact that AJ came out and challenged Paige in the same kind of almost snarky way that Paige challenged AJ when Paige first debuted. As Tony said, anything that leads to him getting tagged in like 6 or 7 different Facebook posts in the span of about 5 minutes means that they're doing something right.
Yeah. No, in all reality, I mean, I can pinpoint certain things that are wrong, like the turn seemed a little bit out of nowhere. AJ Lee, is that really, are they doing this because they were afraid of Paige not catching on, of her not having any viable opponents? Is AJ Lee essentially the John Cena of the Divas division? You know, stuff like that, that you can really question. But I think the difference, if there is a difference, is the reality that, like, there's no one else that we can possibly care about. And that's sad. If we're talking about the status of the Divas division as a whole, it's really unfortunate that our only saving grace is a diva who essentially left. You know, that's really unfortunate. It means that they didn't focus on building any new people. It hasn't been that long. It's been about 3 months, but they still, they can't say that they tried. Yes, Paige has had matches. Yes, Alicia Fox is a nutcase. Yes, Naomi and Cameron may be breaking up. But at the end of the day, they went back to what they know, and the opposition of this versus John Cena is that there's really no other viable contenders, whereas in the main event there are. So if there is a comparison, the only thing that I can see is that it's really unfortunate that it was seemingly having to go this way. I'm not saying that I think it had to go this way, but it's just sad that it seems that that's the only direction they see as something worth putting forward.
See, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you here, Tony, and here's the reason why. I think it's better that they went this way, the route of AJ and Paige again, rather than putting the Divas title into a feud between Cameron and Naomi. Because as good as Naomi is, and Naomi shined last night at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, I thought it was a phenomenal match, especially by Divas division standards. But do you really want Cameron anywhere near the Divas title at this point in her career?
No. Oh, no, don't get me wrong. This isn't me complaining about it. What I'm doing is highlighting the, you know, I don't want to take this thing as just a positive aspect of wrestling. Like, you know, I love AJ Lee, but I want to do it analytically and realistically speaking. What I'm saying is it's sad that this is the case. Believe me, I do not want Cameron anywhere near my television. Like, if I met her, I would probably have someone beat her up. just because I can't. She's extremely annoying as a character, and if there's any reality behind the reality TV show that she's on, and I know there's very little, she seems like a caricature of black culture, and it's horrible. It's somebody that you would meet for 5 minutes and not want to talk to anymore. So in reality, no, I don't want her anywhere near the belt. She's not an appealing character. She's not an appealing diva. It's just nothing that I want to see. But guess what? What I was trying to highlight is the fact that not that they're pigeonholed into this, but that they return to it so quickly, and that's kind of depressing.
Jimmy, your thoughts on the potential of AJ Lee and Paige going forward, and whether or not you'd like to see anybody else inserted into this mix?
I like what they're doing here. Obviously, AJ Lee and Paige are two of their top worker divas. I mean, these two girls can go. They both have their own moveset. They're both established already as champions. Sure, Paige kind of came on the scene out of nowhere up from NXT for those that aren't more familiar with it, like myself. But at the same time, I wasn't against seeing a new face and giving her a shot and seeing what she can do. And I've been impressed with what she's done so far. AJ, I was always impressed with her. At first, I thought she was just kind of a gimmick enhancer. And now I see her as a real athlete. She can go out there and put on a show, and then she does these things that make you say, wow. And, yeah, I know Tony's probably getting a boner from me talking about her like this, but, I mean, that's truly how I feel.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have some decorum, please?
Oh, goodness gracious. Don't get me started. My man crush is gone. Don't get me started on my man crush's injury. I will flip a table.
This would actually be the point where we normally go into our first commercial break, but given the fact that we're kind of running right on schedule, I say we keep this train moving forward.
Yeah, sure, why not?
That's up to you guys.
All right, let's talk about Raw again here. And as you mentioned earlier, Jimmy, we had the return of two former WWE heavyweight champions tonight. And obviously, one of them stuck out more than the other one did, and especially to me. Tony, I'll go ahead and let you talk about this here, because as you put in the format sheet that you sent to me, because, yeah, we do actually kind of go over the show, so we have something of an idea of what's going on here. Tony asked me a question of, was Miz undercut? Go ahead and answer it, Tony.
Shut up!
Yes, the return of Y2J.
Thank you, douche.
they were teasing a multifaceted, multi-platform superstar who is going to return tonight. Well before Raw even started, there were rumors, and a lot of people said it was Jericho. And to be honest with you, I'm like, yeah, it's probably not going to be Jericho. The Miz fits that mold. He just came back from a movie that about 12 people are going to see, so I thought that it just was going to be his official return as well as heel turn. And never have I been so right and wrong at the same damn time. Miz did come back, and he was the one that they were selling as that multi-platform media, whatever, whatever, and he came to the ring, and he sold it. And I've never liked nor have I disliked the Miz. I thought at times he was underrated. I thought that he was one of the few people who, he's one of those fans that turn into wrestlers, which I think is one of the best types. They live and breathe the business, and he obviously is one of the better media people. He can talk. There's rumors about him being with Flair. There's a lot of gumption behind him to be put back into the main event. So when he came out, I thought this was his return to the main event. Then the real return came. Y2J came, and he went in there and he basically just shut Miz up, gave him a code breaker. Miz rolled out, and that was pretty much it for the Miz. He wasn't mentioned again. Even when we went to a break and we're coming back, Cole only mentioned Y2J returning. Now here's the interesting premise: Y2J was then interrupted by the Wyatts, and it was an interesting juxtaposition to see the Miz return and be essentially attacked and Jericho cheered versus Jericho returning, being attacked by the Wyatts, and, essentially the Wyatts being booed, even if they saw that there is this is awesome chant, which, by the way, was used a whole hell of a lot tonight. Not everything's awesome, guys. Not everything's awesome. But anyways, so what I what I wanted to pose a question is, was The Miz undercut? I don't think he was necessarily, but only because I don't think there was ever any intention of making him as big a deal as he was making himself, especially considering that's going to be his character moving forward. He gloated that he was in the Marine Corps. Guys, if I was an extra in the Marine Corps, I wouldn't tell anyone about it. I would cash the check and walk away silently, okay? So there's obviously going to be a character, you know, a characterization of him over-boasting himself as a superstar. So when you compare the two, what do you guys think? Do you think that The Miz was undercut? Do you think that he deserved a little bit more? Do you think that they should have done it differently? Like, what is your take on it all?
I feel as though it was the perfect way to go about it. Again, I really enjoyed tonight's show, but this was one of the big reasons why, because there were rumors swirling all night about who the returning champion was going to be, and finally they get to the skit, you know, and everyone's like, and now the big posterized superstar returns, and everyone is thinking Jericho. You know, I'm thinking Jericho, the wife is thinking Jericho, the whole place was thinking Jericho. Miz comes out. What's he do? He comes down the ring. He starts to act like he's a face. Then he starts talking about himself, running himself up, you know, putting himself up. And that's when it clicked to me, I think, that I wanted it to be Jericho and that Jericho should come out and Jericho should be the one to interrupt him. And sure enough, you know, I kind of pulled an Ian Malcolm where I hate being right all the time. But, you know, he comes out, he does the code breaker, you know, he makes fun of his light bright jacket, which was awful. And I know the gimmick with, you know, Wyatt and Jericho was kind of almost, it was very fast. I felt like it was very quick. It didn't really last. It didn't really have a meaning. I follow, you know, people on Twitter, and I know how Jericho feels about working with Wyatt and whatnot. But I thought the segment itself was very, very good because, you know, everyone was, you know, disappointed that it was The Miz, disappointed it was The Miz. Then Jericho comes out and he brings the spirit back into the place, and the place erupted for the guy, just absolutely erupted. I felt the way that should have happened, and they built it perfectly.
There has been long rumors of a respect stable being formed with Miz, Ryder, and Ziggler. And if there is any truth to that going forward, and we don't know if there is or isn't because it's been rumored for a while and nothing's come to fruition as of yet, this would be the perfect thing for Miz to play off of the disrespected card here. Ryder obviously has his thing about the fact that he was being one of the most cheered athletes on the roster and was constantly being held off of shows. And Ziggler can obviously touch on the fact that he's basically been getting ignored by the brass despite being arguably the most over guy on the roster. This right here is Miz's tie-in to that, and the fact that he made his big return after doing what the company wanted him to do by being in the Marine Four. I'd lost track of how many Marines there were for a second. Anyway, so
was everyone else.
Anyway, so this right here is a way for Miz to play the disrespect card. Anyone who knows me knows that my favorite wrestler is Chris Jericho. So obviously I'm very happy to see him back in the ring, and hopefully it'll be for an extended tour here. We obviously don't know what's going to happen because Jericho obviously has the other commitments as well with Fozzy and with his podcast that he does, in addition to being other various forms of multimedia that he happens to try to keep up with because he's a very busy man. But it's nice to see him come back here. And Jericho has a history of giving younger guys, the up-and-coming stars, the rub, something that we don't necessarily see from some of our main eventers, too. Like, look at what he did for Fandango back at WrestleMania. Look at what he did for Ryback when they had the singles match. And I think that this right here would be Jericho's way of giving Bray Wyatt a rub going forward as well, and possibly, if we don't see the match at Battleground, which I don't know if we will or not, we'll definitely get the match between those two in the singles match at SummerSlam, and that's something that I'm really looking forward to. So altogether, the segment rolled together perfectly here. It gives Miz ammo for his future going forward with his heel turn, though he was kind of leaning heel when he left to go film the movie anyways. It gives Jericho and Wyatt a new, exciting feud for both men here. And as I said to Jimmy when we were talking on Facebook before the show, the promos in this feud are going to be phenomenal. It's something that wrestling fans can be excited as well because of the mic work that both of these guys are able to produce and because of the fact that both of these men are above average wrestlers is why it's really come into his own over the last year or so as a worker in addition to being a character too. So it's something that I'm really looking forward to as well.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to agree with, well, to an extent, I'm going to agree with everybody. I'm more of a wait-and-see type of guy. I know that Harry's more right than he's wrong, so a lot of what he says is stuff that I hope happens, not necessarily stuff that I want to happen, but I'd rather see it happen. So, yeah, I do see the Jericho and Wyatt. I see them tearing each other apart with promos. I'm going to love it. I don't think that The Miz was undercut. I think it's only going to enhance what his return was. What his return is going to be. I don't see him going to the main event. I also don't see how Flair is going to tie in if that rumor is supposed to be true. So I don't feel that any of this was a negative. It was a great segment. It all rolled together, and it's that heel versus face dynamic where faces can get away with certain things and heels can't, and it's wrestling, and that's exactly what it was. So I'm excited. I really like the way it went.
Real quick, before we get to the second view here, you mentioned Ric Flair. The other rumor behind Ric Flair was Dolph Ziggler. Do you think they'll go anywhere further with what we saw tonight between Dolph Ziggler and Summer Rae, and would you want it to? Because I think it could be an interesting pairing going forward. Jimmy, why don't you go ahead and take that one first?
I don't like it. I don't know. I get too much Total Divas because of the wife, and she's an idiot on there. I think she's an idiot in the ring. I think she's an idiot in the back. It's just my opinion. She's another pretty face that they brought into the company who doesn't have a lick of experience, and they're basically pushing the pretty face gimmick. Oh, she's a pretty face, and she's got her tongue in another guy's mouth. And I'm just like, nah, get out of here. Get me something good. And that's, I just, no. Don't let it happen again. Make it stop. Kill it with fire.
I actually don't think she's that pretty of a face. But anyways, I'm hoping they don't put her with Ziggler. I don't think Ziggler needs a female counterpart. I do see that Summer was, quote-unquote, conflicted while after the kiss. Like, she was just trying to make Fandango jealous, and then Dolph went in again, and she's like, oh, wait, I didn't want it to go that far. And if those are the implications, then it just looks like Summer is going to be going down and making out with whoever Fandango's wrestling that night. I don't know. I don't know how. I mean, I can see the line of Flair being the, you know, limousine riding, girl stealing and all that other good stuff that he does. And it worked, but Ziggler is the, you know, I'm going to steal your girlfriend type of dude. I don't think he needs Flair to, you know, enhance that. I don't think this is going any further. If it does, I'm in the same boat, you know, as Jimmy. I don't want to see it go any further. But what else is Dolph doing? Unless he's doing what you're presuming he's going to do with what's that guy's name? Ryder? Zack Ryder. Yeah. Him and possibly The Miz.
Hopefully we're going to see something further here. And I don't know if you guys happened to catch it or not, but one of the things that was pointed out during the pay-per-view was the fact that when the crowd was going crazy for Ziggler, he actually looked out to them and yelled, "They can hear you," referring to the people in the back.
Rather not they actually do anything about it is a different story for Dolph.
Yeah, I agree.
I pointed out with Sean, this is a waste. Why do we open these pops and then just leave them sitting, Tony?
I drink them. I don't know if you know that. All right, so my second do is going to be a bit on the negative side. For those of us that are online all the time, we're well aware of Botchmania and what it has to our liking and disliking. And I believe that tonight Raw had a segment that should be highlighted there and everywhere in the world as to what not to do on a wrestling show. There's product placement in a lot of things on TV, TV shows. Wayne's World made fun of it in the 90s. I mean, it's something that you accept. Whether it's King Shilling Skittles or DX you know, throwing out their own T-shirts and DVDs. And when it's done tongue-in-cheek, it can be done well. When King does it, it's just a matter of fact. It just is what it is. That's what's sponsoring the pay-per-view, so just let it happen. But tonight, we saw on what was supposed to be a PG-rated television show, Santino talking to his Cobra and Adam Rose joining him in trying to shill a hard lemonade. Now, I drink every weekend, okay, pretty much, and I have a great time, and I'm probably a week or so away from an AA meeting. I don't know. But the reality of the situation is that I'm not some, you know, PTC parent who sits here saying they shouldn't be showing this on TV, they shouldn't be doing this, that, or whatever. But what was the point? How did this help anyone aside from the company that was involved? And did it really help? Because this lemonade, what is it, Twisted Tea? Are you guys going to go purchase it now that you saw that Adam Rose and Santino are now, you know, complete supporters of this Twisted Tea? Or is it going to make you go out there and purchase it now? I don't believe so. So what did this really do aside from waste time, possibly get them in trouble, and just be another stupid segment with two wrestlers who aren't really doing anything?
Yeah, I can't help but feel that Mattel is going to be less than pleased about the fact that there was an adult beverage broadcast on a show that's marketed as a TV PG show. And Mattel is one of the WWE's biggest sponsors with the action figure deal that they have. Jimmy, go ahead and give your thoughts here, and then I'll go ahead and touch up on this as well.
Yeah, at first I didn't really think much of it until my brain kind of slipped on. I was kind of enjoying the segment in itself before I realized, oh no, alcohol. And that's when it all kind of went downhill. I don't know, I was just kind of enjoying his little, oh no, no one has come to my party. You know, I thought it was hilarious sitting there talking to the Cobra. Adam Rose shows up, and I'm a fan of his currently. And, you know, I thought, oh great, you know, he's bringing a party with him. But then the alcohol, and that's where I was like, uh-oh. And Harry alluded me to that as it happened, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about it, and this is probably going to be much more than a slap on the wrist for them, I think, especially for a PG show, and it was probably just a bad move. I think someone in marketing, someone in decision-making made a very bad move here.
Somebody in decision-making had one too many of the product that they just shielded.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was just, I mean, I don't drink, so it didn't, you know, play to my demographic at all. And, you know, Tony is a drink away from an AA meeting if he decided to go. And it's, I don't know, it's one of those things where it's, they put it out too much, I think. I mean, yeah, it's just a Twisted Tea, but at the same time, it's still alcohol. So it kind of depends on, I think, the perspective and how someone takes it. But at the same time, I would have not put that on there. Maybe put it on a commercial and have one of their guys endorsed to do it rather than put it on the live show. And that's how I would have done it. But like I say, that's to each their own and all that fun stuff. But, yeah, no, bad move.
I'm going to touch on this real quick here because we're running a little bit behind schedule here, so I'm just going to touch on this real quick. But as I said earlier, I think this is a boneheaded decision here, and the main reason being here is that their major sponsor is Mattel Corporation, which makes the action figures, which makes the rings and stuff, which does a bunch of publicity stuff. They just had a toy fair where they unveiled the upcoming series of lines here. It's something that kids around the world purchase here. I'm an action figure collector myself. I'll be the first person to admit that I collect figures as well, and I purchase quite a few of Mattel's products too. And the thing is here is you're risking alienating your biggest demographic by doing an alcohol advertisement on a PG show, and that's parents. And you can have the argument that they have John Cena who appeals to the kids. Daniel Bryan had his appeal to the kids in addition to having his appeal to the smart fans as well. But something that pretty much I would imagine most people will agree on is the fact that an alcohol advertisement on a PG show is going to do nothing but alienate both parents and people who generally don't drink anyways on a show where you think you'd be able to avoid something like that, especially as we've not seen anything like this recently as far as advertisements go and for adult products.
on WWE programming anytime recently.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to real quick, like I know, you know, the whole sponsors and whatnot and everything else, it's all there, it's all black. And I can just wait for the news report that comes out that, you know, they may have gotten in a little bit of trouble or whatnot. But I really, really want to ask a question, not to you guys, but just in general, what the hell was the point? Like, I mean, I would have taken a pointless segment where, you know, Jimmy, like, you know, just him giving Santino a party. And, I mean, at the very least, it goes with Adam Rose being a, you know, bringing the party to people and blah, blah, blah. And you can see the blonde Rosita being all pretty and whatnot and possibly start something with them since neither one of them are doing anything, either as a team or opponents or whatever. But instead, they shilled an alcohol. And it was one of those blatant, like, they said Twisted Tea, and, like, the contract said you had to say it 7 times, and 3 of the times you had to smile while saying it. And they had to fit all of those, you know, within a small 15 seconds. It was just really weird to see. It was really out of place, and it was just pointless.
Yeah, I'm with you on the fact that if they'd have just kept it as a standard backstage segment where they possibly introduced the team of Adam Rose and Santino Marella, I'd have been okay with that. But it's when they crossed that line into going to non-PG-related material as far as the actual Twisted Tea itself that I think they screwed up.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break real quick here on the Raw Reaction. We're going to come back. When we come back, it's Harry's Hit. And since we didn't do it out of the first break, another thing we've got to do is we've got to make sure we pay some bills here, Tony. So why don't we go ahead and hit the music here real quick, and we'll be right back after this quick break. You're listening to the Raw Reaction, a product of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com here on Blog Talk Radio. Into the Raw Reaction, Harry brought her Tony Acero and special guest Jimmy Christopher sitting in for this week's episode here. And Tony, I think it's time to pay some bills. What do you say?
Okay, let me whip out the checkbook.
The Raw Reaction is a presentation of Pro Wrestling Powerhouse's Powerhouse Radio, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. In addition, we are associated with 411 Mania as well as the Yes, Yes, Yes Facebook group and our sister podcast, brother podcast, whichever, Wrestling to the Max, which airs after the Raw Reaction does here Monday nights. Tony, why don't you go ahead and tell them about your work with 411?
I cover the Raw Report every week. You can read it right now. There are plenty of AJ pictures in there. You know, I just
and
do what I do. I wasn't
there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I wasn't there last week. I had to do some stuff with a last-minute bartending gig that I had, which turned out really well, Harry. I got to tell you about it one of these days. It includes boobs. But aside from that,
I saw the post in the. I saw the way you let off the wrong report.
Yes, it's a good gig. Yes, the Wrestling 5-1 has made a return after a 3-week absence. I didn't tell anyone about it because I didn't feel I needed to, but I did need a bit of a break. I got it, and I came back. We talk about Vicky Guerrero's absence and how wrestling fans reacted or didn't react towards it, as well as, you know, pay-per-view predictions, which I got wrong. I thought for sure Rollins was not going to win the briefcase, and I actually picked Dolph Ziggler. So yeah, just join me every week. I'm there, you know. So
if it makes you feel any better, I picked Ziggler and Orton.
Oh, okay.
My original pick was Barrett, but well, we all know how that turned out. Jimmy, why don't you go ahead and give them a little bit of details about yourself?
Oh, I'm a referee, seasoned referee up here in Northeast Ohio. I've been on multiple Legends tours, worked with some of the old guys, X-Pac. We're going to have to pay money to him if we mention him here. Tony, whip out the checkbook, buddy. We've got another one to write. No, but I've been around for about 4 years now and just a lot of experience and hopefully enough interest and intelligence to keep this show afloat.
Yeah. What's an Xbox?
Oh, you know that the one guy, he's got the long hair and the bandana.
The 1-2-3 kid, Johnny, does that help any?
Ron Jeremy, okay.
Ron
Jeremy. That's not cool.
Jesus. All right, getting back into the show. Here we go. It's time for Harry's Hit.
Here comes the... Here comes the... Here comes the...
Harry's Hit.
Harry, I really think you should play that whenever you enter the bedroom. I'm just saying.
Oh no.
I still find myself head bopping to that every time I play it here on the reaction. Anyway, Harry said tonight is actually going to tie into the central theme of tonight's episode of Raw. And my hit here, and I find myself talking about this guy all the time. No, not Dean Ambrose, Tony. Keep the jokes to yourself. It's Damian Sandow, or tonight, Vince McMahon-dow. Is there anything that this guy touches that is not complete gold? From the walk to the entrance to the growl, he nailed the impression of Vince McMahon tonight. And I think more importantly here as to what the night turned into, he gave kind of a teaser of, you remember when the music hit and when Vince's music hit and Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and John Bradshaw Layfield all went crazy over at the announce table until Sandow walked out. He teased a big return because we haven't seen Vince on TV since before WrestleMania, if I'm not mistaken. So this was a way to tease a big return, and then with Chris Jericho, The Miz, and AJ Lee all returning later on in this episode, they delivered on that tease a little bit later, and I thought that was a really nice touch there. Your thoughts on Vince McMahon-dow, Jimmy?
Oh, Vince McMahon-dow, I was dying. I'll tell you what. At first I'm thinking, you know, oh, Vince is back. He's going to come out. He's going to do his thing. Maybe he'll fire somebody. Sandow comes out and just, he tears it up. He did such a great job. It was funny from start to finish. You know, the wig, the walk, the suit, the growl, even the you're fired, you know, was so great. I was head over heels for it, I'll tell you.
Tony, your thoughts?
In a vacuum, it was great. His impression was pretty much spot on for the most part. His growl was perfect. His making fun of, you know, McMahon. I'm sure Vince McMahon loved it, thinking it was hilarious. But we can't ignore what happened immediately after. No one wants to see the great Khali. Sandow once again lost in a almost record time. Is he in the IC Battle Royal or not? It sounded like he might be. But, you know, Steph said, you made fun of my father, blah, 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 you dirty rat. So I don't know. And moreover, even if he is in it, he's not going to win. So it just, it goes back to the question, like, what are they doing? Is he going to come out and impersonate someone every week? And if he is, you know, when will we tire of it? Will we tire of it? Will it lead to anything? I'm all about storyline, not, you know, I'm all about storyline progression, whether it be Ryback squashing someone every week and not leading to anything, or something like this, where Sandow is just taking seemingly random, not all too random, it does depend on location, but, you know, impersonations and ultimately losing. What is it leading to? If it leads to something, then great, this will all be for, you know, a reason, or as you know, it might not be for anything. And that's the only bothersome part. But in a vacuum, if we're looking at it as just that portion, then yeah, I thought it was hilarious. I typed in the report, you know, Vince McMahon's returning. Oh my God! I don't like to delete stuff. If I'm surprised, it's surprised in there. So you know, I was like, what the hell is he doing here? How does this not make any sense? Why did they not say anything? And then Sandow comes out and like, you son of a bitch, you make me chuckle. You really do.
Two things to touch on there. One, Vince McMahon is a former heavyweight champion, so he could have been the tease there that they had been talking about. You know, obviously, we kind of figured that wasn't the direction they were going to go, but he could have been. The other thing to touch on there real quick about the Sandow thing is I actually disagree. I think this makes him a very serious threat to win the Intercontinental title. Do I think he's going to? No, but at the same time, him putting himself into this match, if it stays, it makes me assume that maybe this might be the start of something with Sandow, and I'm hoping that it is because, as long been established here on The Reaction, I'm a very big fan of Damian Sandow's work. We continue on here in the Raw Reaction, everybody. Once again, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Jimmy Christopher sitting in tonight. And you look thirsty over there, Tony.
Yeah, I'm a little parched.
All right, let's go ahead and hit Tony's third due here. Nice of you to finally use a glass, by the way.
Well, you know, we did the dishes. I was torn between talking about Wade Barrett losing the IC title and how I thought that was really unfortunate and what I'm actually going to talk about. You know, maybe we'll talk about both. But and what I pinpointed as the focal point of what I wanted to mention was Cesaro seemingly officially turning heel tonight. And he did it not because he beat Kofi's ass, not because he you know, indented Kofi's chest more than it already was. Seriously, he should get that checked out. But more because just as he was about to swing Kofi, much to the joy and excitement of the crowd, he tossed Kofi to the side and said, nah, not even.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
Exactly. Was the focal point of him essentially turning heel full-fledged, like, you had Heyman. They went with this tweener thing. They assumed, you know, he was going to just keep on going with this seemingly doldrum of push. You know, whether it was going up or down, we don't know. Heel or face, we have no idea. And tonight, he went full-fledged heel. He attacked Kofi. He hit up a babyface with some brutal, you know, ring post bashing. And he didn't do the swing, which I guess is going to remove the moniker King of Swing, but I think that the complete denial of that one moment within his matches that causes a cheer is his official, I'm a heel, let's see where we're going with it now.
Jimmy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like where they went with it tonight. I really think that Cesaro is finally breaking away from that tweener spot. He didn't do the swing like everyone wanted him to. He went batshit crazy at the end of the match after getting put over on the network and not on live TV, or not getting put over, rather. Kofi goes over on him, Cesaro loses his mind, you know, and somehow even Michael Cole got thrown into that. But it was it was what I think a lot of people wanted to see. I think a lot of people finally wanted Cesaro to choose a side. And, you know, you're running with Paul Heyman or you're doing your own thing with Paul Heyman kind of hanging there. And I think it's finally that time where he drew a line and he said, this is where I'm at. I don't like you people. I'm doing it for me, and I don't care who I have to go through to get there. And it's exactly the way that he did it tonight.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's nice to see him finally not straddling the fence of that tweener space that he's been occupying for so long here. And that was one of the things that I think affected him in the main event last night at Money in the Bank, as well as the fact that he was kind of just there, and he wasn't really a threat as much as he would have been in the briefcase match because he wasn't ready for the main event yet, despite the fact that I'm a big fan of Cesaro's work. I've been a fan of Cesaro going all the way back to when he was on the Independence with Claudio Castagnoli. And I'm a big fan of his work, but nothing about his character really stood out. He would do the swing for a while, and then he would stop. He would go back to doing the swing, and then he would stop again. He had the brief start and stop feud with Swagger, and then he got away from it once Van Damme got involved, and then they just went away from that completely. And then he's just kind of been there recently. But this is a way to establish a real mean streak in Cesaro, as well as establish him as, especially since he's the guy that won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, as Paul Heyman is so apt to remind us. In a related story, did you know that his client Brock Lesnar conquered The Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania? Anyway, moving on. Cesaro has recently won a major battle royal as well, so that has to establish him as the probable leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, for the Intercontinental title battle royal that's going to be happening at Battleground here. If you were to have, we'll go more into actual Battleground picks once the time comes here, Tony, but do you agree that Cesaro is the favorite going into this battle royal? And if you don't think he is, then who do you think is the favorite going in?
Assuming that we don't really know who's going in. Well, not even an assumption. We don't know who's going in. But just if we're going to stick with the previous tournament and with the mid card that we have now, then I would have to side with Cesaro being the favorite, and not favorite by fans, but just as the most likely one to win. And if that's the case, is Wade going to come back, fighting him or someone else? I don't know. That's way down the line. But, yeah, I see Cesaro as possibly, and maybe that's why they went with the full heel turn, just to make sure that we knew exactly where he stood. And with Heyman's promo beforehand, that only, implicates a stronger backing to him actually getting the belt. So, yeah, I see it happening.
Jimmy, your thoughts as far as, is Cesaro the favorite for the Battle Royal, and if not, who is?
I think you have to give the nod to Cesaro here after the way he performed in WrestleMania. I don't think there's anyone else that you can pick. I like that they put Kofi over to seem stronger going into a pay-per-view event like this, but at the same time, the way that Cesaro finished that fight after the match, I think it shows that level of determination and that, I'll do this to Kofi, I'm going to do this to everybody else, I already won one Battle Royal at WrestleMania, I'm going to win this one. I think that odds are he's going to be walking out of there with the Intercontinental Championship.
Given the fact that we saw a full Cesaro heel turn tonight and the way that Barrett had to lose the Intercontinental title, do you think that this might be the beginnings of perhaps a babyface run for Bad News Barrett?
No, not necessarily, because I think once he comes back, he's going to keep doing what he's been doing. He's going to keep doing what he's used to. He's going to come out, he's going to say he's got some bad news, whether or not it's for the fans or for his opponent or whomever it may be, and then he's going to come out and do his thing in the ring. He's going to play dirty if he has to. He's going to fight and brawl and do what he's good at. So, no, I don't see it necessarily being a heel or a face turn, but maybe more of a, you're a heel and I'm a heel, but, now that I'm back, the people disregard me as a top heel like I was, and I'm going to work my way back up, and hopefully once he gets the title back, he goes right back to the, right back to where he started.
Tony, real quick here. How do you think they're going to bring back Bad News Barrett? Do you think it's possible that he might come back as a babyface here, especially given the reaction that the fans have been giving the gimmick lately?
I hope not. I was kind of hoping that he would stick around. I know he's injured, but if you remember when Randy Orton had that injury, was it his shoulder or arm, and he had, like, these weekly news updates, like, I was hoping that we'd get something similar from Wade. Like, you know, just as we think he's gone for months or gone for good, like, he comes back because he's afraid he's got some bad news and just cuts these promos on people and just kind of weasels his way out of matches and whatnot because he's injured, but still holds on to the belt. That's kind of the angle. I thought it was tailor-made for him and for his character. They could still go that route without the belt, and he could still be as popular as he is as a heel. But, yeah, I agree with Jimmy. I don't see a face turn, nor am I sure that I want it. I think that he's one of those heels that we react to, not because it's cool to cheer the heels, but we just actually like the character. And there's nothing wrong with that. You can be a heel, you can be dastardly, and still have our interest. And that's where I think the line is drawn. It's not that we want him to be a face. There are heels that we see and want them to actually change sides. And then there's heels that we see that we just enjoy their work. And I think that's where Wade gets his cheers from people enjoying his character and what he brings to it.
All right, so we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier here, so we'll go ahead and actually go a little bit further into what happened on Sunday evening as well with this here, because for the last time for this evening, let's talk about Raw, guys.
All right.
The main event implication specifically being, we talked about the match itself and how I mentioned that I felt that it was another way to establish Roman Reigns as a serious contender here. But let's actually get into the post-match from the main event. And let's talk about the fact that we almost saw a cash-in from Seth Rollins and the fact that Dean Ambrose stopped him. Do you think that Rollins cashing in tonight would have made more sense here and then let Ambrose chase the title with Rollins? Or do you think that they're better keeping this feud in the mid-card, whereas we let Cena and Orton and Kane kind of do their thing in the upper card? And it's like the WCW theory of the main events are what the main events are. You're watching for the matches, you're actually watching the mid-card guys, your Ambroses, your Rollins, your Ziggler's, your Barrett's when he was healthy, your Cesaro's, your Kofi's. Do you think that, A, Rollins should have cashed in tonight and Ambrose should have stopped the cash-in and actually cost Rollins the briefcase? Or do you like the idea of Ambrose constantly costing Rollins the chance to cash in? Tony, go ahead and go first here.
Yeah, the money is definitely in the chase, and the Rollins cashing in right now would just, it wouldn't have worked. Nor do I, you know, it's funny, Triple H was, kayfabe-wise, was bashing on Bryan for being short, not big enough, a B-plus player, and then Seth Rollins is his choice as the future. Have you looked at the two side-by-side? Seth is a bit smaller, not in height, but as far as stature goes. So it's really, that's a little dynamic that I'm not 100% sure I can get behind, but we'll let it slide. As far as Rollins pinning Cena tonight, I think it would have led to a great moment and a pretty big moment in wrestling as a whole, whether it be a person who has followed Tyler Black from the Indies to just a new fan seeing Seth Rollins and being really upset that Cena, you know, lost the belt to him. I think it would have worked to an extent. However, I'm way more intrigued with Ambrose running in every single time he tries to catch it in. I think it fits Ambrose's style and his character, and I think that it's going to lead to a lot of interesting clashes. I've long since believed that the briefcase can be one of the most efficient tools in creating a new star, and I've felt that they've failed many times, whether it be Cena winning it and then losing, Sandow's, you know, crash and burn, even all the way back to Mr. Kennedy winning it and then having to give it up because they thought he was going to be injured for far longer than he was. Little moments like that have really hindered what this briefcase can do. But there's so much that it can do. And this being the tool for Ambrose to chase Rollins, I think can make an intriguing and compelling storyline that could last for quite a few months. So, yes, I do feel that this is the right way to go.
Jimmy, your thoughts on Rollins' attempted cash-in? Would you have put the belt on Rollins tonight? And are you think there's more money in every time Rollins tries to cash in Ambrose stopping him?
I think it's much more interesting to watch Seth Rollins have to look over his shoulder for Dean Ambrose every single time he cashes that or attempts to cash it in. It's a great tool, like Tony said, to put over a guy and to make him look great. And now in this case, they're putting over two guys. They're putting over Rollins and Ambrose with this. Ambrose has always had that psychotic kind of unstable mentality character where you thought that he'd go off the deep end. And this is the way that he's going to do that. He's going to stalk Rollins And every time the Rollins is going to have to cash that in, the first thing he's going to have to do is go through Ambrose and to be able to do that. I think it's perfect storyline. I think it helps because basically it's, well, you stabbed me in the back in the Shield, and now I'm going to make sure that everything you do from here on out, especially reaching the top of that mountain that you so desperately want, is null and void. And it's just, it's like Tony said, it's his style. It's exactly the way that I would have wanted something like this to happen. And I think that after he said that at the beginning of the show, it only makes sense for Seth to hold on to the briefcase longer, to prolong that story and to prolong the idea that, yes, every time that he goes to cash that in, he is going to be there. And then maybe have a couple times where Rollins thinks about it and he's looking around for Ambrose. Ambrose never shows up, but by the time he makes that split decision, you know, Cena or whoever is just waiting for him then. And now Dean Ambrose is in his head. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, I'm with you guys on this one. I think the money's in the chase, as you said, and I have a funny feeling that that briefcase is going to become a bartering chip in a match between these two down the road, and I think I remember saying that. I don't know if it was to you, Tony, or to Sean last week when he sat in for you, but I remember saying that Seth is going to end up in a match where his briefcase is on the line against Ambrose, and it's going to be a case of Ambrose frustrating Rollins to the point where he finally decides that he needs to get Rollins Ambrose one-on-one inside of a ring. And if putting the briefcase up as the bait in order to lure Ambrose into that match is the way to do it, then that's what's going to happen. I think with that said here, are you guys ready here? Is about ready to put a nice little bow on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's time for the final reaction. We still, soundbite pending, because the one that Greg made says final take, and that's just not right, because we're the raw reaction, the final reaction. All right, now, I know, Jimmy, you've been listening to the show, so I assume you know how the final reaction works?
I am close, but not entirely sure. Go ahead and explain it.
All right, for those of you new to the Raw Reaction tonight, and if you're listening live, we want to thank you for listening on Blog Talk Radio to the Raw Reaction here as a part of Powerhouse Radio. The final reaction is where we assign a letter grade to the episode of Raw that we just watched and talked about, where we talk about our favorite moments of the show and our least favorite moments of the show, and rather or not, it's recommended viewing going forward, and if we like the direction going forward here. Tony, since you're making your return tonight, why don't you go ahead and go first here on the final reaction.
I'm going to give it a B+, just like Brian. You know, there were things that I didn't enjoy, okay? And that's almost always going to happen with a three-hour show, point blank. You know, it's because, there's going to be something annoying, something that bothers me, something that bothers somebody else. You know, it's going to be rare that we get an A+ show or, you know, unless it's immediately after Mania. But in regards to the show, just the fact that there is so much that we weren't able to talk about tonight, the real American, you know, Jack Swagger's face turn, more in depth about certain things that just weren't highlighted, Goldust and Cody Rhodes trying to do their thing. We weren't able to talk about a lot of things that happened tonight. And typically the reason why we don't speak about something is because we're simply not interested. Tonight it was a rare case where it had nothing to do with our interest. It's just the fact that we only had a certain amount of time. Because a lot of Raw was great, so I'm going with a B+. It's intriguing. It makes me want to watch next week. It was one of the more fun Raws that I've recapped. A lot of people in the comment section, as well as just, you know, us in general, really enjoyed it. So I'm excited, and I think it's a well-deserved B+.
Jimmy, your thoughts on the show? Letter grade and favorite moment, least favorite moment.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a solid D. Only because I feel like there's a lot more to have in it of a pay-per-view. And often Raws coming off of the pay-per-view are kind of slower. They're building new storylines and they're getting things started. So you're not really delved into a whole lot of story. It's just kind of the random actions that go on. I mean, yeah, we still have Rollins and Ambrose going after each other. Bo Dallas came out and asked for the 60 seconds of time for his guys that are injured and so he can remember them. My favorite
moment of the night, and I know people are going to be like, why is he talking about this? But I loved the Swagger Rusev face-off. I've been waiting for this for a couple weeks now, and I've been talking about why isn't the real American fighting the guy who's trashing America, and it's finally happened. And I, you know, I'm doing the Ian jumping up. I hate being wrong all the time, but it's the storyline writes itself, and it's gonna finally gonna give Swag to you that will make like a clown. And I mean, I think is great, and I want to see where it goes and where they can take it. The least favorite, man. I hate saying Adam Rose because I really like him, but that whole segment with Santino was just, it was a bad idea. And why they should have just thrown a party. And the whole PG alcohol thing, it's going to come back to bite them. I just know it. You guys know it. Anyone that's listening knows it. And it was a bad move. And that's why I'm going to give it a B, just a bad decision outside of the storybook writing. And that's why I'm going to go with a B here.
All right, I'll go ahead and wrap this up here. I'm going to give the episode a B plus as well as Tony is. And before I go any further here, if you guys are not a member of the Yes Group, I suggest checking it out. And our resident CM Punk hater, Nick DeMichael, just posted a photo, which is freaking hysterical. And I'll leave the thread up so you guys can get the context of it. But anyways, I'm going to give the episode a B plus here. And the reason I'm going to give it a B plus is I thought last week's episode of Monday Night Raw was an A-minus episode because it was fantastic for what it was, which was a go-home episode. Whereas I think tonight's episode was really good, except for two things. And one of the things Jimmy just touched on when he mentioned the whole situation with the Adam Rose and Santino Marella backstage segment, and I got a funny feeling that Jimmy's right there. They're going to catch heat for this going forward. But the other thing is that stagnant opening promo with Cena, Triple H, and Stephanie that just kind of drug the whole vibe of the show down in the middle. So, anyways, regardless, the rest of the show itself, outside of the opening segment and the backstage bit with Santino and Adam Rose, was fantastic, top to bottom. Everything had a reason for happening. Nothing seemed out of place on the card. Everybody brought their A game in the ring tonight. And as a fan, that's something that I really appreciate seeing as well, because it gives you a chance to get a look at what these guys are doing and why we watch. Because when they can put on an episode as compelling as tonight's was and makes us want to sit back and enjoy the show as fans, and as well as sitting here for the better part of an hour and a half discussing the show with you guys are listening to us here on the reaction, that's something that we look forward to. And it's episodes like tonight that make what we do here as fans and as podcasters in relation to the product worth the actual effort that we put into doing this for everybody there. Anything real quick to touch on before we get going here, Jimmy?
I'm good to go.
All right, Tony, you want to toss out any more real quick plugs before we get out of here?
I am a Greg DeMarco guy.
Speaking of Greg, you can listen to him tomorrow night here on Powerhouse Radio as the Greg DeMarco Show returns with Renee Michelle. We call that a segue. Anyways, for our special guest Jimmy Christopher and for Tony Acero, I am Harry Broadhurst. This is The Raw Reaction. We are a product of Powerhouse Radio. We want to thank you for listening. We will see you next week, June 6th, here. Excuse me, I don't
July
think it's
6th.
I think it's the 7th. July, and it's
July
7th, too. We'll see you next Monday night here on The Raw Reaction. I need a frickin' calendar.
Bye, everyone.
I hit the button and it didn't work. Bye. The Raw Reaction, a product of Powerhouse Radio. www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. Join us tomorrow night for the Greg DeMarco Show.